Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Susan Shand, Jill Robbins, and John Russell. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
India has successfully test-fired a missile that destroyed a low-orbit satellite in space. Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced the test Wednesday in a nationally televised speech. He said the development marked a major step forward in the nation's efforts to become a world power in space technology. Our scientists shot down a live satellite 300 kilometers away in space, in low Earth orbit, Modi announced, speaking in Hindi. He added that through the test, India had registered its name as a space power. Satellites collect valuable information and carry out important communication activities during modern warfare. Anti-satellite weapons permit enemies to attack the equipment. The same technology can also be used to develop weapons to block incoming missiles. Modi said the test was not designed to create an atmosphere of war with any of its neighbors. I want to assure the world community that the new capability is not against anyone. This is to secure and defend fast-growing India, he said. India's foreign ministry said the anti-satellite system was meant to protect against possible threats against the country's growing space-based assets. In addition, the technology would help guard against possible missile attacks, the statement said. Very few countries have used such weapons. India became just the fourth nation to do so, following the United States, China, and Russia. Such abilities have made some countries fear that anti-satellite technology could fuel the development of new space weapons, security experts say. This could set off a race between competing nations. After India's announcement, China's foreign ministry said it hoped all countries would seek to continually protect lasting peace and tranquility in space. In the U.S., Acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan warned that such tests risk leaving a mess in space from the pieces they leave behind. My message would be, we all live in space, let's not make it a mess, Shanahan said. Space should be a place where we can conduct business. Space is a place where people should have the freedom to operate. Anti-satellite weapons that break up their targets can send many pieces flying through space. Experts say these pieces, also called debris, could threaten satellites or spacecraft in Earth's orbit. India's foreign ministry said after its missile test that officials believed there was little risk of major debris created that could hit other objects. It said this was because the test happened in low Earth orbit and the pieces were expected to decay and fall back onto the Earth within weeks. A spokesman for the U.S. Department of Defense said the military's strategic command was tracking more than 250 pieces of debris from India's missile test and would continue to do so. I'm Brian Lynn.
Ukraine is preparing for presidential elections. The voting will take place on Sunday. If no one wins a majority of the votes, officials will organize a second vote between the top two candidates. That runoff election would be held 2 weeks later. The winner will face great difficulties. Ukraine is struggling to deal with corruption and help energize a weak economy. The country is also at war with rebels in the east. The rebels receive support from Russia's government. Ukrainian voters will find 39 candidates on the ballot Sunday. However, the election appears to be a three-way race between the current president, Petro Poroshenko, the well-known politician Yulia Tymoshenko, and comedian Volodymyr Zelensky. Poroshenko, the incumbent, says he has worked for reforms during his five-year term. He says he has moved Ukraine toward the West and has fought corruption. His supporters say now is not the time to change leaders. But the Poroshenko campaign has been hurt by reports of corruption in military spending. These claims have hurt his hope for re-election. In the past week, someone new to politics is leading in opinion studies of likely voters, 41-year-old Volodymyr Zelensky. During a recent visit to his campaign headquarters, young supporters were busy putting information about him on social media. Zelensky campaign spokesman Dmytro Razumkov says Ukrainians are longing for new leaders. The lack of trust in all the political elites has led to a decision by the Ukrainian people to punish them, and the name of this punishment is Zelensky, Razumkov said. Zelensky's television program is called Servant of the People. On the show, an everyday Ukrainian worker becomes president by chance. So, is this life about to imitate art? Zelensky's show is on a television station owned by a billionaire who has been accused of corruption. Some think Zelensky is under the businessman's control. But Zelensky says he would fight Ukraine's corrupt elite. He says he would end the guaranteed protection from legal action of judges and politicians. I'm Susan Shand.
Imagine you are looking at an American newspaper or news website. You read a few stories and see terms such as healthcare, football game, or bank policy. These terms might all seem to have nothing in common, but they share a grammatical feature. This feature is often found in writing, especially in news writing. Today, we will explore a pattern you will often find in the news business. Nouns modifying or describing other nouns. Understanding this idea will not only help your reading skills, but also help develop your writing skills. Join us as we explore a common pattern in news reporting.
An adjective is a word that describes or modifies a noun or pronoun. Consider this example.
Everyday grammar is a good program.
Here, the adjective good describes the noun program. A noun is a word that is the name of something. That thing could be a person, idea, place, or action. Sometimes, nouns can act like adjectives. In other words, they change the meaning of other nouns. Listen to this example.
Everyday grammar is a grammar program.
Here, the word grammar, a noun, is acting like an adjective. It is modifying the noun program. For the purposes of this report, we will call this pattern a noun-noun pairing. We have discussed this subject before in another Everyday Grammar program, which you can find on the VOA Learning English website. It is called When Nouns Act Like Adjectives.
You might be asking yourself, how does this discussion relate to news reporting? Susan Conrad and Douglas Biber are grammar experts. They note that in news writing, nouns that act like adjectives are almost as common as adjectives themselves. In other words, understanding groupings of noun-noun words is an important skill to have when reading news stories. The good news for English learners is that there are patterns in how news writers use these pairings. Nouns that relate to abstract entities, things that you cannot really see, are often modified by other nouns. Examples include descriptions of organizations, businesses, or even human health. Now, let me take you on a tour of a news website and offer a few examples.
Our first stop is the newspaper's current events section. In this area, you often find stories about government institutions, cities, courts, and so on. Noun-noun pairings are often used to identify institutions, write Conrad and Biber. Let's consider how nouns are used in that manner. One example is the word government. Here is a line from a story on the VOA Learning English website.
Estonia has launched a project to make government administration completely digital.
Here, the noun government is acting like an adjective. It is modifying another noun, administration. Other nouns you might find in the current events section include city, state, hospital, and community. For example, you often hear reports about a state subsidy or a court case. Now, you know the grammar behind such terms.
Our next stop on the news tour is the business section. It is another place where readers often find nouns modifying other nouns. Consider this report from the New York Times newspaper. The story is called
China Pledges Openness in Hopes of Reaching a Trade Deal.
Here, trade deal is the structure we would like to draw your attention to. Trade is the noun that is, you guessed it, modifying the word deal. The story talks about China's desire to end a trade war with the United States. Yes, trade war is also an example of a noun-noun pairing. Company profits, labor supply, and market forces are other examples that you will often see in business news.
Our final stop on this tour is the health section. We start by listening to part of a VOA story called More Americans Died from Drugs in 2016 Than Any Year Before. The story tells about a statement that U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein made to reporters.
Rosenstein called it a horrifying surge in drug overdoses. He added that drug abuse is wrecking families and communities throughout the U.S.
You heard the terms drug overdoses and drug abuse, both cases of nouns modifying other nouns. The nouns drug, health, and cancer are all used to modify other nouns. You will often read stories about drug tests, healthcare systems, cancer treatments, and cancer drugs, for example.
The next time you are reading news stories in English, try to look for examples of nouns modifying other nouns. You can find a list of common nouns used as modifiers with the text version of the story on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In March of 1889, Grover Cleveland left the White House after 4 years as president. He had been defeated by Benjamin Harrison. As they were leaving, Cleveland's wife, Frances, spoke with a member of the White House staff. She said, "I want you to take good care of everything. I want to find it the same when we come back, and we will be back in 4 years." Frances Cleveland was right. She and her husband moved back into the White House after he became president again in 1893. Grover Cleveland is the only man to serve 2 terms separated by the administration of a different president. Shirley Griffith and Frank Oliver begin the story of Grover Cleveland's second presidency.
Grover Cleveland did not want to be president again, but he was worried about the future of the United States. He did not think President Harrison could solve the serious economic problems the country faced. President Harrison had approved very high taxes on imports. He also had approved an increase in the supply of silver money. Grover Cleveland said both actions had hurt the economy. He also feared that Harrison was not strong enough to oppose the demands of special interest groups in the Republican Party. Cleveland believed he was the only Democrat who could defeat Harrison. He won his party's nomination, and he was easily elected to a second presidency.
Grover Cleveland immediately turned to the nation's economic problems. The country seemed headed for a serious depression. Only a few days before Cleveland's second inauguration in 1893, a major railroad failed. Then, another big company declared failure. This set off a selling panic on the stock market. In the next few months, almost 8,000 businesses failed in the United States. 400 banks closed. 1 million workers lost their jobs. The prices of farm products fell lower than ever before, and thousands of farmers, unable to pay their debts, had to give up their farms.
Experts offered a number of different reasons for the depression. Some said it was a plot by members of the stock market to ruin farmers and seize their land. Some said it happened because American factories were producing more goods than people could use. Still others said the problem was caused by the government's money policy. For many years, the United States and other nations used both gold and silver as money. Paper money was used to represent a nation's gold and silver holdings. The value of silver was tied to the value of gold. In the United States in the early 1800s, 15 ounces of silver had the same value as 1 ounce of gold. This value did not change until after 1860. That was when mines in the western United States began to produce large amounts of silver. The extra silver caused the price of the metal to fall.
In 1871, Germany declared that it would no longer support its paper money with silver. Instead, it would use only gold. Other European countries quickly did the same thing. The United States did too. In 1873, Congress passed a law that stopped the government from using silver as money. Western silver producers protested. They put great pressure on lawmakers to change the law. 5 years later, Congress passed a compromise bill. The compromise bill said the government could issue limited amounts of silver money. It said the government must buy $2 million worth of silver each month for that purpose.
12 years later, during President Benjamin Harrison's administration, Congress passed a new silver purchase bill. It said the government must buy 4.5 million ounces of silver each month. The Treasury Department would buy the silver with new paper money that could be exchanged for silver or gold. The new law increased the amount of silver money used in the United States. The country soon became sharply divided on the issue of silver money. Wealthy businessmen and bankers did not want to use silver money at all. They wanted the country's economy to be based only on gold. This was what was known as the gold standard. They believed the gold standard would keep the value of the dollar high. Using silver, they said, made the dollar less valuable.
Farmers, laborers, and others wanted to use silver money, and they wanted an unlimited supply of it. Without silver, they said, the country's money supply would be too small. Gold would increase in value. People who had borrowed money would be hurt. They would have to pay back loans with dollars that were more valuable than those they had borrowed. President Cleveland supported the gold standard. He opposed any use of silver for money. He said the United States should use only gold, as other nations did.
President Cleveland was sure the Silver Purchase Law of 1890 had caused the economic depression. He explained the situation in this way. The law had caused businessmen and investors to lose faith in the government's money policy. They were afraid their money would drop in value as more silver money was put into use. Investors began to withdraw their money from businesses. Banks began demanding early payment of loans. Everyone wanted gold. They took their paper money and their silver to the government and exchanged them for gold. In 1890, when the Silver Purchase Act was passed, the government held almost $290 million in gold. After 2 years, withdrawals had cut that amount to $100 million.
President Cleveland and other administration officials began to worry. It was possible that gold holdings might fall so low the government could not support the dollar. Cleveland decided the only answer was to get Congress to kill the silver purchase law. Then the government could stop buying silver. It could return to the gold standard. The Congress was not in session, however. It would not meet again for several months. President Cleveland did not want to wait. He believed the problem was too serious. So he called a special session of Congress. The president did not expect an easy time with the Congress. Many congressmen supported silver money, especially those congressmen from silver-producing states in the West.
President Cleveland believed he could get Congress to kill the silver purchase law. But if he showed any weakness, the fight would be lost. Then, just before the congressional debate, he learned he would need an operation. He felt a rough spot in the top of his mouth. It got bigger and more painful. Doctors examined the spot. It was a cancer. President Cleveland asked how long he could wait to have the cancer removed. "If it were in my mouth," one of the doctors said, "I would have it removed immediately."
Cleveland agreed, but he said the operation would have to be kept secret. News from the White House often affected short-term activity on the stock market. News that the president's life was in danger could cause the nation's economic crisis to become worse. Cleveland decided to have the operation on a friend's boat in New York Harbor. Newsmen were told he was going sailing with his friend. Doctors made final preparations. They were not afraid of the operation, but they were afraid of what would happen if news of the operation were leaked to the press. One of them spoke with the boat's captain. "If you hit an underwater rock," he said, "hit it good and hard, so we will all go to the bottom."
As the boat moved slowly up the East River in New York, the doctors put President Cleveland to sleep with an anesthetic drug. Then they began the operation. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.